Welcome to the Press Row. Behind-the-scenes stories from the world of sports media. Press Row. Insight and interviews from around the sports world. Now here's your host, Jonah Siegel.
Saturday. Super stoked to be here. It's an exciting Saturday. Mike, we have a return guest. I will bring him on right now. Live from, I'm going to guess, either his office or his basement, for those of you not on YouTube. Because all podcasters are in their basements. But he's not a podcaster or a blogger. He is from Sportsnet 590, the Nick Kyprios, the Kipper and Bourne show, the real Kipper, Nick Kyprios. Nick, how are you?
Jonah, good, buddy. How are you? Thanks for having me.
So this is a special show for us today, Nick. We have made the switch from the world of Zoom over to the world of Google.
Yeah.
No one really had heard of Zoom pre-pandemic. And for a whole host of technical reasons, we've now made the pivot over to Zoom. I'm noticing the fidelity is much better, hoping the quality is good. But how are things with you? How are your family? What's new and exciting?
Well, everything's great. Thanks for asking. Life just gets quicker and quicker. And I know we just briefly had a touch of a conversation on that just prior to coming on and doing your show. But it's fast and I'm paddling like hell. And that's basically what it is. Above water, you want to look calm, cool, and collected, as they say about the duck. But underneath, you're moving your feet as fast as you can. And it's been good, but it's been a more controlled environment for me, meaning that I am back with Sportsnet. We do have a national show from 5 to 6 right across the country on the major platform at Sportsnet, but it's not as hectic to the pace that I had prior leaving Sportsnet in 2019 temporarily. That one included, of course, Hockey Night in Canada and countless of nights to working long hours. But this one seems enjoying every second of it with Justin Bourne and Sammy McKee on our daily program.
It is absolutely critical, in my opinion, and we've talked about this before, that there is variety in the marketplace for the audience. I'm not going to say the fan because that's in your company name, but it is. Like, there's good competition now. There's two shows, well, there's multiple shows, but there's two shows that are on terrestrial radio, and then for idiots like me that stream all the time, there's lots of competition, and it's good to have a variety of shows and variety of guests. Explain, you know, tell us how you've evolved. If we talked about your show previous to this year, it was clearly Maple Leaf centric. You did a lot of Leaf talk. It feels like this year it has evolved a little bit. You're still Leaf heavy, but you've certainly evolved beyond just that.
Yeah, no question about that. Sportsnet, the Fan 590, made a pivot to really focus on local. So, they developed a Raptor show that's been terrific. Will's done an amazing job there. Alex, the guys, Murph now, just if you're a Raptor fan, you know where to go. And they originally 3 years ago did the same thing for myself, Justin Bourne and Sammy McKee, where it was just, hey, we're local and let's do the Toronto Maple Leafs for an hour. And we did that for 2 years and it was very popular. And just in terms of, again, I mean, we have different shows out there. You mentioned the competitors, but where do you draw the line on 10 minutes of the Leafs, 20 minutes of the Leafs, and then moving on to other subjects? We said, no, we're going to go one full hour on the Toronto Maple Leafs, and the fans loved it. And that was great. Going into our third year, they did not want to take that away. So we've gone from now the hours from 3 to 5 to 4 to 6 with the decision from 5 to 6 to go national. And of course, you can't do that on just the Toronto Maple Leafs alone. So in that second hour, we kind of blanket the country and the rest of the league for that matter. And just the other day, we We had Ian McIntyre on for the first 20, 25 minutes in our 5 o'clock national segment, talking Vancouver Canucks, which may, you know, I don't think anybody's arguing that's been the biggest story in the National Hockey League, this turnaround, and recently now re-upping Jimmy Rutherford. And we didn't really see a future in that this time, probably last year, with the decision of Bruce Boudreaux, no Bruce Boudreaux, fire him, don't fire him. It was a train wreck last year. The turnaround's been phenomenal. So just to bring it back to how we've handled it, we spent the first 25 minutes. And of course, we're in Vancouver market. We're in Calgary's market. So it's very important for us that we touch on those big stories, when they present. So it's been fun. It's been a fast-paced 2 hours. You know, Jonah, when I started this show, I was like, can I talk for 2 hours? I'm going to run out of things to say. And I worried about that. And, from day one, I'm like, I don't think we got everything in. I thought we would. And it's been so much fun ever since. And, you know, we just want to keep it fun. Informative, entertaining, whatever words you want to say to describe it. We just want to bring out the best of our personalities over the course of 2 hours. And I can't tell you how much fun I'm having on that show.
Well, isn't that what it's all about? Is that, you know, you played a game that you loved, you made a career out of it, you made a living out of it. And yet now here you are X number of years later and you've found a way to have fun in your second career. I mean, isn't that what you teach your kids?
It is. And I'll tell you something too. And I'm perfectly honest with anybody that asks me, when you compare TV to what we're doing today, and it's just night and day. TV is a different beast. It's a short sprint where you got to get your thoughts out quickly. And, you know, when you're in a panel and you only got 3 minutes, like if you told me Sammy McKeon and Justin Board, we all had 3 minutes to say what we needed to say and then move on, it would be impossible. Absolutely impossible. But this form now for me gives me the best opportunity for people to truly get to know me. Television in 20 years never did that. And right now, from your show to my show to anything in between, it's just about the viewer, the listener, feeling like they're getting the real deal. They're getting you, you're authentic, and you would sound no different if the cameras or the microphones were off. And that's why there's so much success now in the podcast world, is because you're getting raw, sometimes authentic reaction from personalities that are still very difficult to get through in a short span on television. And I truly feel like in the last 3 years, people have gotten to know me more since I've started this new venture than at any point over 20 years of my career.
And Nick, how much more fun would your show with Doug have been? No, I'm being serious.
Hang on,
let me finish.
Sure.
Forget the cameras. If you just had... If radio had evolved into streaming audio now,
yeah,
where you weren't cut down into the segments that you're cut down now.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, there was a window there with Hockey Central at noon, with myself, Doug, and Darren Millard, of course.
Yeah. Good old what's his name?
Well, you know what?
What's his name in Las Vegas?
He's in Vegas now. He's gone on to Stanley Cup championships. And
I'm a Darren Millard fan. I'm just having fun with
you know. I mean, he's hanging out with all the big stars.
That's right.
So every once in a while, I have to remember. But we were on the cusp of something there, which was ahead of our time a little bit.
I just mean the format. The format changed because, as with television, radio too was very, you've got news, you've got updates, you've got traffic.
Yeah.
In your show now, it's much more even flow, Nick.
It is, but we were scratching the surface on people coming to us and feeling like we're a little bit more relaxed. We're a little bit more conversationless instead of those snippets of, okay, we're going to talk about the power play and you're going to go first and then you're going to go and then you're going to go. And it's like that old I Love Lucy. And I know I'm dating myself, but where you got the conveyor belt,
yes,
she's trying to wrap the chocolates. That's the way television for the most part has been on a panel. And, you know, still today you watch some segments and you're like, ah, that's not doing it for me right now. But we had something going and it evolved into the podcast world. I'll say this to anybody, Darren Millard, Doug McLean and myself on Hockey Central at noon was really the start of spitting chicklets before spitting chicklets was spitting chicklets.
Yeah, my only point, Nick, is that radio has evolved and benefited from podcasting because it has lost that same formality that TV also had. That's all.
Yeah, no, for sure. And like even when I first started 3 years ago, it was to be presented as a podcast. We would go the first 45 minutes 3 years ago without a commercial break.
That's my point.
That was unheard of.
That's my point.
So to this day, I know we're on different platforms as you are now with your YouTube channel and downloadings and all of that, but we'd still present as a podcast. We're on national television now on Sportsnet. But nothing about it suggests that we're on TV. We have no cameramen. We really have no direction in terms of hitting breaks. Or sometimes we can, if we have a hot topic, they're saying go with
it. Right.
We'll break somewhere else down the road here. So again, there's no turning back. We are in this world of podcasts, and first and foremost, that's the way we see our show.
All right, so you said something very interesting. Vancouver Canucks, just down the highway or up the highway from where I am.
Yeah.
The Toronto Maple Leafs are there tonight. If ever there was an example, a case study, that coaching matters in the National Hockey League, at least right now, it is that. And a certain somebody's on the hot seat right now, as his team is struggling. Has it ever been more evident to you, Nick, that coaching really makes a difference in the National Hockey League if you have the right guy?
Yeah. When I was 17, I would tell you that the main purpose of a coach was to open up the gate and let us play. And now I'm 57 and he is the general. He's the one that sets the tone. He's the one that makes you believe in certain ways. And when he doesn't believe in you, he's got to find different ways to squeeze it out of you. And I've known.
What's changed? Have you matured? Is your viewpoint changed, or has the game changed?
No. My viewpoint. I don't think it's been any different in any era. And I know sometimes we can look back and say, yeah, the players have changed, and we were a lot scareder of our head coach. We were a lot scareder of consequence and repercussions for doing stuff out on the ice, like throwing a pizza up the middle of the ice and having it come back and end up in your own net. I mean, that stuff I knew that I'm pretty well could have been done the rest of the night, that I wasn't going to get another shift. And today I think it's a little differently, but that's where you got a guy like Rick Tocchet, who, you know, isn't from the 60s or 70s. He's from the 90s. But, you know, today kids would look at our existence in the 90s and think of it like we thought of it in the 50s. So I get all of that, but, you know, Rick's old school, but he's not old school enough to find to be smart enough to say that there's different means or ways to get the same message across that I had when I played, that there are consequences, there are repercussions. And he's just been better at it than other coaches. And we've heard Sheldon Keefe, you know, particularly in the last 2 or 3 weeks, talk about accountability, like really talking about it, where that word's come out multiple times. And the next thing you know, we've seen David Kampf, a healthy scratch, or John Tavares play 2 minutes in the third period, as we saw last week. So now, is this a good time now to get that message across, to turn around the Toronto Maple Leafs, or is it maybe a little too late with now half the season gone already? We'll have to see how this plays out, but the Leafs aren't as bad as they've portrayed the last little while. And in their best days this season, they were never as good, but that's for Sheldon now to see how much he can squeeze out of them. But there's no question when it comes to maybe Rick Tocchet or even Rick Bowness. And I know Rick took a leave of absence for a little while, but it really stems for his calling out of the hockey club at the end of last season for accountability and stepping up. These are hard messages for kids of today to listen to, but so far, both those hockey clubs have had tremendous responses.
Hard to argue with a coaching change in Edmonton then, Ro?
Yeah. Listen, you go 21-6, I think, since Knobloch came in, and how do you say that wasn't a great decision, a right decision? The one thing that, you know, you got to remember too is despite, you know, that horrific start of the season, and since I've been working with Justin Bourne, he has taught me more about analytics. We sometimes have a segment where it's like he'll throw out all these numbers to me and I'll go useful or useless.
Uh-huh.
And I've never spent more time trying to decide what side I'm on the numbers. But there were some really good, hard evidence for the Edmonton Oilers, despite their start, that they were trending in the right direction, and it was only a matter of time before it was going to turn a little bit for them. So in that area, I believe that was 100% true, that better goaltending, better decisions, and this thing had a chance to really turn the other way. Some other clubs can't say that for sure. But Knobloch seems to have the right temperament, the right calmness for that particular market at that particular time. And then a big equation in all of this is Paul Coffey, the ability to come in and be Paul Coffey, one of the greatest defensemen in the history of the game, and go up to a Darnell Nurse and say, okay, it's okay to make a mistake. We want to limit them, and we want to get you in a mindset where you start playing the percentages of your decisions, which one's high risk and which one's low risk. If we can start making better decisions, you're going to be a better defenseman, and we're going to start climbing up the ladder. And I think he's done that with Nurse and Bouchard. I don't think Bouchard will ever win a Norris based on the way he looks in his own zone, but he still has the ability to put 60 points, 70 points, maybe score 20 goals in the league. And those players don't come by very often. And Skinner's been so much better now that, you know, that that Skinner, you know, situation has been cleaned up with Campbell now out of the picture.
So you've got contemporaries in management positions now, and it's absolutely, every sport is a copycat. Everyone says our game's a copycat game. All games are copycat games. How many of your buddies do you think have itchy trigger fingers on their coaches as a result of a couple of teams who've made changes? And not only, not just your contemporaries, their bosses. The owners are going, what the hell? What are we doing here?
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, it's the, I don't want to say the easiest decision, because it's never an easy decision, but it's the one that can jolt your hockey club now faster than anything else, because the lack of trades, the salary cap, like it's only cash for those guys. So it doesn't go against the salary cap, and you can bring somebody else, pay them whatever you want, and it doesn't affect you in any other way other than coming into the dress room and having a new leader. So it is in many ways maybe one of the first places now owners will look, because they understand that I can't trade this guy. I can't trade this guy. I'm locked into this guy. This guy has a no move. I want to move him, but I can't. There are no move clauses for coaches. So it is an easier place to start. And, you know, the one thing that is consistent, though, when you fire a coach in any era at any time, Jonah, is that as a general manager or president, as long as you hold that card, you got to be careful on how early you want to go to it, because if it doesn't work out, you know the next focal point will now be on you. So, you know, whether you feel that way about the Leafs or, you know, LA's struggling now and Todd McClellan's there and he's been around a long time and he's also now in a position where people may be looking at, hey, what's wrong with the LA Kings? Is it coaching? But once you pull that trigger and it doesn't work, then the next set of eyeballs will be higher up than the coach. And that sometimes plays into decision-making on not if you sometimes do it, when you do it.
Speaking of higher up in the hierarchy, last summer was one of the most interesting and bizarre scenarios I think either of us have ever seen in any sport play out. The poker game between Kyle Dubas and Brendan Shanahan.
That was like reality television at its finest.
Yeah, the curtains were open and we got to watch.
Yeah.
So you've had some time to let things brew, distill. I have two questions. First off, how much damage to the organization from a timing perspective was done? Like, that really sucked. Like, forget how good you think Tree Living is or the job that he's done. From a timing perspective, he was put, like, no matter, they could have bought in the greatest GM of all time. From a timing perspective, hands were tied behind the back pretty closely, weren't they? That's question one. And then question two, what the bleep do you think really happened?
Okay. Let's answer the second question first. What really happened was a power play between Kyle Dubas and Brendan Shanahan. That's all. And it's not anything we haven't seen before behind the scenes. This one got played out in front of us, as you said, in real time. But this was just a negotiation at the end of the day. That's all it was, is a guy who needed a new contract that came up with a set of terms that were not met by Brendan Shanahan and the board. So you move on.
Was it lack of trust, lack of faith, dislike?
I wanted more power. I didn't want you to have to run every thought and idea I had to the board or to yourself. I want to be in a position where I can make these decisions
autonomously,
and I can do them quickly.
On
top of the dollars. So, I mean, there's a few boxes Kyle wanted to check off to move forward as the Toronto Maple Leafs, and Brendan didn't meet them. That's all it was. And that's, again, that's not any different than what Jimmy Rutherford went through the other day with Aquilini, right? Yep. Here's, I want to sign a new 3-year deal. Okay, this is what I need. Aquilini goes, check, check, check. Let's have a press conference. That's all.
Do you think Shanahan made the right move? And we'll come back to my first question in a minute. Knowing what we know, did Brendan make the right move saying, I can't live, Brendan or the board, whoever you think made the decision, saying, I can't live with this?
There's no question that Brendan did the best made the best decision for Brendan Shanahan. Like, I'm the president. You're telling me that you were what? Like, what are you asking, Kyle? That we be co-presidents now? That that I'm not your boss? That you report to someone at the board now? That's cutting me off at the knees here. Like, I'm the president here. You're the general manager. So absolutely he made the right decision.
For Brendan. But what about for the Maple Leafs?
That's a different conversation, though. That is a different conversation we're having. If you're asking me at this point, does Brendan Shanahan deserve to be running the Toronto Maple Leafs? Has he done enough to keep going?
No. My question is conversation. No. We'll get there. My first question is Brendan Shanahan's number one job.
Yeah.
Is to bring a parade, Lewicki style, to the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
Did he do that in letting Kyle Dubas go or firing him, essentially?
I am a belief that there was strong evidence to suggest that Kyle should have been fired a year ago before that. So if you're asking me, do I believe that the Leafs would be in better shape right now if Kyle stayed and had more autonomy? 100% no, in my opinion.
Thank you. Okay. That wasn't so difficult.
No, not at all. But, you know, there's just different ways to get to the same answer, right?
Okay. Yeah.
But like, you know, again, I don't know where the conversation wants to go, but look at what he left Brad Tree living. Like,
well, that's question two.
Okay.
That's
all you need to know is whether or not you believe that Kyle Dubas should have stayed and the Leafs would have been in better shape. Look at the shape he left them in.
So part of my question then was, it's hard to really evaluate Tree living. Now, he's made some boneheaded mistakes.
Okay, hold on for a second. Okay. Yeah, he's missed on a couple. Okay. But under the circumstances, the lack of cash, what? Klingberg. Okay. Yes, not great. But 1 year deal, $4 million. Yeah, that was just like throw it on the wall and see if it sticks. Max Domi's been good. 1 year deal, minimal. Bertuzzi, okay, hasn't been great. Can he still have a back half of the season? He looks more like a top six possibility, but 1 year deal. These are deals. They're not killers. They're not killer bad deals. They're just deals that haven't not worked out. That's all.
Yeah, my point was, again, he's made some boneheaded moves, but he was pretty handcuffed given time, if nothing else, given timing. This happened to a guy. When did he start, right? Like, this all happened very late, and he had to come in and deal with the Matthews stuff.
Yes.
It was shitty. Like, let's just call it what it is. It was really shitty.
Oh, no. It's getting shittier. Okay, because now you're at a fork in the road, and it's like, okay, are we thinking we're in this thing or are we not? And if we're not, or if we are, what do I have to work with here? Where are the expectations now? People really believe I'm going to go get two grade A defensemen now to shore up this blue line? Really? Have you take a look at the cupboard and what Kyle Dubas left me with? How am I supposed to do that? Where is my goalie situation? Where is John Tavares as a second-line centerman in the back half of the season? There are some major, major question marks for Brad Tree living in this back half of the season. So I think in the next 2 weeks, they got to really take a good look in the mirror and say, okay, what are we here? Are we fooling people here to thinking that we can compete this year, or else, you know, or do we have to make some sound decisions here so we don't completely blow this thing up in the next 5 or 10 years?
So if I were talking to a radio show host and NHL trade deadline came along and the Maple Leafs stood pat, that would be a ratings bonanza for me. No.
that's, I do believe that if you were to think that you might even still give up a first rounder, you got to give it up for somebody that's going to be around for the next 2 or 3 years on the blue line. Like the days of the Leafs trading for Foligno or McCabe. Well, McCabe had a good contract, so I'll exclude him here. But Ryan O'Reilly to me was a disaster beyond belief, that you would make a trade for a guy like that, bring him home, make him a Leaf, a former captain, a Conn Smythe winner, and you had no reassurance he was going to stay with you moving forward on a 2 or 3 year deal. To me, that cannot happen at the trade deadline. Those days are over. But if you want to talk about giving up a first rounder and feeling like Chris Tanev's the guy, you better make sure he's under contract ASAP, because the damage that that those first and second rounders gone in the last few years, like I said, is something that can haunt you for the next 5 or 10 years.
So above tree living is an interesting group of characters, starting with Brendan. What's this, year 8, 9 of his tenure?
Yeah, they're closing on 10 for sure. I said this on our show the other day, you know, he's gone the length of his tenure here with the Leafs on plan A. He has not yet pivoted to a plan B, a retool, a reset, a blow up. The only question that is still out there, depending on what kind of season concludes, is does he get a chance to go back to the board and say, I can still do this, I can still fix this, I got a new plan? Generally, coach or general managers and presidents at some point, Jonah, they do get a second chance. I'm wondering where Brendan's is.
So if Edward Rogers Jr. called you, as unlikely as that might be.
Very unlikely.
And said, Nick, what should we do here?
Yeah.
Not should we hire or fire Brendan? Let's not have that discussion.
Yeah.
But I think you'd agree that the recent signing of 34, pretty damn good work. He's the best player in my, probably the best player in my lifetime that they've had. Easily top 2 or 3. They've got him locked up for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen,
so from a player perspective, yeah, forget coaching, forget management, forget that. What would Nick Kypreos do to the roster? What would you do?
Well, I've had this philosophy the last few years that is much like a lot of others. And sometimes, you know, if it's as noticeable as anything out there, it doesn't mean it's the wrong decision. But I've never believed that the core four, with all the money up front, and not necessarily just whether or not I believe in these guys or not, that's again a different conversation, but I just never liked all that money into four forwards and limited your back end. I am a believer that you win Stanley Cups from the net on out. You have to defend. To me, winning cups means defending. Sheldon, if you've even listened to his comments in the last week, still wants to outgun you. He talks about scoring 4 or 5 goals and getting the next goal. On 2 different occasions this last week, we've heard from Sheldon Keefe saying it's tough to win 2-1. And I'm not of that belief. I am of the belief that you can win games 2-1. You can have that mentality that 2 goals is enough. And coincidentally, the team, I think I know they're playing tonight, won a game the other night against Arizona 2-1. They didn't look great. They've got tremendous talent. We've got Miller, top scorer. Petey's in the running for an MVP. Quinn Hughes looks like Makar on a lot of nights, but they found a way to win 2-1. And that's, to me, is the missing element for the Leafs, is they don't defend. They don't know on a consistent basis where to stand at the right time, at the right spot in the most critical time in the hockey game. Now, they closed the door on Calgary the other night, protecting a lead. Can they bring that into the equation here?
Consistently.
Moving consistently. And just to kind of circle back, like Morgan Rielly, that blue line, Muzzin going down. Muzzin in his heyday was very good for the Toronto Maple Leafs when he was healthy, and he was shutting guys down. They have not replaced him, nor has there been any money to replace him with. So that would be my suggestion to Edward, is get a better balance in your roster, get a better chance to have a consistent look.
So you were not a finesse player, Mitch Marner. You were not.
You noticed
the other night, lots of controversy, and actually a lot of controversy on this side of the border on the Connor Bedard incident. And I got a lot of calls from friends, older guys and gals, saying back when Nick Kypreos played, that guy would have got the snot kicked out of him for hitting Bedard.
Yeah.
And your old buddy Luke Richardson after the game said, hey, that was a clean hit.
Yeah.
So what's your take? Should, you know, we don't have the Dave Semenkos anymore on the roster, because you can't. Ryan Reeves isn't, I don't even know where the hell the guy is anymore, but you can't have that type of player anymore. That was a cleanish hit. Unfortunate. Yeah. You don't want the stars of the game out there.
Yeah.
Quarterbacks get hit. It happens, right? Like, I watched a lot more college football this year. I watched a lot of NFL football. These guys get hit. It happens. They are the stars of the game. Are we living in an era where stars do take hits? I mean, there's not a lot of hitting in hockey, but
yeah. Well, you're not scared to take a run at anyone. And in my era, you were, right? You knew that if you're going to take a run at Gretzky over his career probably had 3 major hits on him, 4. The Olympics, 1 every 4 years.
Right.
You know, it was like you were petrified because you knew the repercussions. And today, that's not the case. And I get it. It's evolved, and we don't have those type of personalities out there. And I'm not a believer that you have to fight after a big check. But I am a believer of you guys decide, right? Decide whatever you want on how you want to react. But no reaction is the worst thing if I was a coach, right? Nothing. Apathy or just the making that you're reaction. Moving on. No response is not acceptable on my hockey club. So you guys decide how you want to answer it. If fighting right away is, then I'd rather have that than nothing. If it's scoring a power play goal, I'd rather have that if it's nothing. If it's going after their best player on a clean check, I'd rather have that than nothing. If it's a scrum where you tell somebody, I'm going to get you, I don't care if it's the next shift or I need to do it next year or the year after, you are going to pay for this. Whatever it is, it just needs to be something, and nothing is unacceptable.
That's actually a really good answer. Thank you. I could have taken that in a lot of different places, but I think your answer is actually smart. And
fighting to me sometimes is and has been over the course of history sometimes really overrated, and that's coming from a guy that did it and 1,200 penalty minutes.
Well, to me the dumbest thing is the staged fight. The game begins. Nothing's happened. Yeah. Two guys drop the gloves. That's just
with no emotion. It has to come with passion and emotion for it to have a substantial effect on your hockey club, right?
And the Wade Belak articles, the things that I read about the poor guy being petrified the night, not being able to sleep the night before, knowing he was going to have to fight a guy the next night, to me is the most ridiculous thing I've, it's awful. And I am not anti-fighting. Now, if a guy goes and hits Steven Stamkos from behind dirty, I want Wade Belak to go beat the living pulp out of him. Yeah. I want that out of the game.
Yeah.
But that stage fight to me is so stupid.
Listen, like, people still want to take the one incident that we rarely see in today's game and still blow it up. And I know we had the interesting thing a few weeks back with Ryan Hartman, going after an innocent player and Perfetti in Winnipeg to pay the price for a hit that had nothing to do with him. And to me, it's about a message that you're sending that those things are unacceptable. And it's up to the players to decide how to do that.
Correct.
But there is emotion in that. There is effect in that, that not only resonates on your bench, but your fan base and how they feel about their team and other teams taking liberties. And again, this is your game. You're on the ice. I'm not on the ice. I'm on my couch at home, or I'm in the studio. It's not for me to decide. It's about you guys in that situation to make a decision on what's best for your team, your pride, your emotion. All of it comes into play. And again, if you need to take a number, take a number. If you need to now send a message to say, you want to run our best player, I'm going after your best player. And just see what that does to a hockey club physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, right? That's all comes into play here on who ends up winning a best of seven in game 5, 6, or 7. Those things, they grow. And that's the beauty of our game. It's live and it's played out right in front of us. And it doesn't have to be a fight right away. No, but it cannot be nothing.
So I remember vividly hearing the words from the Oshawa Generals, the Philadelphia Flyers select Eric Lindros, and him not putting on the jersey. A little ironic when you hear that they have to trade away a guy that doesn't want to be a Philadelphia Flyer. What do you think happened there?
I know there's been so much play on and the emotion of the hockey club and their reaction, and so many people, especially in our world where there's bloggers and there's us and everybody else in between. And it's like, just not good enough that a guy says, I don't want to play in Philadelphia. We got to find out why.
Is that what it is? But I can accept that. Do you think that's what it is? Simple.
Listen, it's that simple.
Okay.
He does not want to play in Philadelphia. Now, you want to go try to find an answer? You want to be a conspiracy theorist and point the finger at Kevin Hayes and as someone that poisoned a prospect into not signing there? Are you kidding me right now? You really think that that's the reason that the kid does not want to go to Philadelphia, because he was so excited when he got drafted, but yet Kevin Hayes told him something different, and now he doesn't want to sign? That's all we do when we get together, is we bitch and complain about why we're not successful on our respected hockey club. This coach is screwing me. I don't get enough ice time. This guy doesn't play young players. It happens every day for the last 80 years. But because it didn't work out for Kevin Hayes in Philadelphia, doesn't mean it's not going to work out for somebody else. This was the kid's decision, a family decision. He might, maybe he hate, Maybe he hates Tortorella. Maybe he hates Rocky movies. I mean, whatever the case is, if this guy doesn't want to sign, what does it mean in terms of rules and regulations? And when do we need to trade him? How long can we keep him? What's the compensation? All of it just not, our feelings are hurt and we're taking this personally. I don't understand the Flyers' reaction to it. The man has rights. And one of those rights is he doesn't have to sign if he doesn't want to. Where this thing kind of got ugly for me, and I'm a big Keith Jones fan, and Daniel Briere's the salt of the earth, but I think their overreaction to it really poured gasoline on the fire here. And, you know, this could have been easily a situation where you make the trade for Drysdale and you just say, we got a heck of a defenseman right now. It cost us a great prospect and you could have easily moved on. And to me, it was just a little bit of an overreaction that kind of fed this beast. Trust me when I say this, he's not the first player that doesn't want to sign with a team and he won't be the last. This has happened a lot behind the scenes. But this one got played out publicly.
So pulling a 180, coming back to the Leafs, you said you don't necessarily believe in the core four. Two of them just signed.
I said that I don't believe in the money in four.
I agree. I agree. You didn't name names. I'm going to name names.
Yeah.
Two of them just signed long-term deals with long no movement clauses. And I will go on the record saying that no movement clauses should not be allowed. You should be allowed one per team, maybe, but different conversation. That leaves two. And if Brad Tree Living, Brendan Shanahan, Edward Rogers are going to do something, well, the other two have expiring contracts coming up.
Yeah. Well, there's only one. There's not two. It's right. Mitch Marner.
Can you actually see a world where Matthews is on the Leafs without Marner?
Yes. Yeah, I can.
And do you think Kyle could have ever seen that world? Or we're now at that place because Kyle's not there.
We're still not sure if Brendan can see that world, right? Because, listen, Brendan's the man in charge here. He has to stamp on every, as the president, these are your signings. They are your no movement clause. So it's up to Brendan now to decide if this thing goes south the rest of the season. And he's still the guy moving forward here. How do I change it up? Where do I go? Who's got the most value? It's not even close right now. Who could bring a boatload back for you? It's Mitch Marner. And just look no further than the Winnipeg Jets. Pierre-Luc Dubois on a year that he's going to become a free agent brings back significant pieces that made them so much stronger. And Marner's way better than Pierre-Luc Dubois. So it's not hard to figure out if you really want to change things up. Mitch Marner's the only one that can do it for you.
It has been said to me by many smart people in the Toronto community that the Kyle Dubas divorce would not have played out the way it played out if a Keith Pelly had been in place at the time. Keith Pelly is now in place. Well, he's not there yet,
but yeah,
he's been hired. Do you think that changes things for Brendan Shanahan?
100%. And it changed it for Masai and on the Raptors. 100%. They've got a new boss now.
And what effect do you think that has on your previous comment?
Depending on how this season plays out, that's where Keith Pelly comes in and runs an analysis on this season, 3 seasons ago, 5 seasons ago, I mean, he goes through the last run of Brendan Shanahan, and he has to decide if Brendan's the guy moving forward or not. That's what will happen if the Leafs go quietly this season.
But isn't what you're saying, and I happen to agree with you, by the way, they have 15 regular time wins right now. Is that right? 14, 15 regular?
Probably 16 with the Calgary game.
Okay. I thought it was 14 then plus one is 15, but you might be better. Whatever. It ain't a lot. It's not much. If we agree.
I think you're right. I think they were at 13, maybe right. 14.
Whatever.
We're in the ballpark.
Whatever. It's somewhere between, it's either 15 or 16. It ain't good. We'll agree that it's not impressive.
Yeah. We know it's closer to Ottawa and Montreal than it is Boston and correct. Florida.
It's not elite. For a team that should be elite, it's not elite. And if we agree, the tree living is sitting there going, wait a minute, I'm not about to put all my chips into the trade deadline because I don't believe. Aren't our expectations already set for what this season, like our goaltending is a mess. This is them speaking, like their goaltending is a mess. Wall may or may not come back and be the next coming, but whatever. The only reason they have what they have is that the current third goalie has stood on his head.
Yeah.
Without that move, it's a bleeping disaster, but you get what you get, so fine. But how much does this season's results really matter if the GM is already saying, slow down your expectations, boys. I'm not ready to go all in. I want to see if these guys actually have it.
Yeah. I think as Brad Tree Living moving forward, if he's got the attitude that he may not push his chips in at the trade deadline, as you're suggesting, then the scenario in Brad's head is, what are the consequences to a quiet season this year? Right?
Yep.
And that goes with Brendan Shanahan too. So now we've got a new boss coming in April. Right. And I think there needs to be at least a couple of conversations, I think, between Brendan and Keith or Brad and Brendan to say, you know, if we go down this path, are we okay moving forward here? Because we've seen in the past, Jonah, where general managers have pushed chips into a trade deadline, knowing I'm out of here if it doesn't work. I don't care what the next guy is looking at in 3 or 4 years because I'm not going to be here anyways.
Right.
And that's factual. So where is Brendan and Brad in their mentality of are we trying to save our jobs here, or do we have jobs if we don't push all our chips in? So I don't know how they decide, but they probably need to answer that question for themselves on what the outcome is. If Brendan Shanahan feels like he's got job security, then it might be a different picture on what type of action Leaf fans can expect at the trade deadline. How's that?
All right. That's great. In Nick Kiprios's mind, is Brendan Shanahan a job security guy?
I'd say I don't think anybody should feel safe with a new CEO coming in Keith Pelley.
I'm going to ask the question again. Is the Brendan Shanahan that you know,
yeah,
the type of guy who worries about that or is worried about that nearly 10 years in?
No. No, he's not.
Okay.
Brendan Shanahan is a very confident guy, and he's made a lot of money. And I don't think you'll ever paint a Brendan Shanahan in a corner.
Right. And Tree Living, I would imagine, is probably equally as confident in his own abilities and situation, given he was not out at work for very long. And if he got gonged here, he's got a lot of money and he would probably get another job very quickly.
Brad is a very intelligent guy, and I would have thought that he's played a number of scenarios out when he joined the Toronto Maple Leafs, including, okay, where's this team this year? Where do I see it in 3 years? Right. So I don't think he's shocked that they aren't considered one of the top teams right now in the National Hockey League. So I think he's weighed out a couple of scenarios, and maybe he's been reassured by somebody above him that, you know, we're not signing you to let you go in 2 years.
Right.
Put it that way.
Okay. Last question. When Mitch Marner speaks the way he does after losses.
Yeah.
It's nails on a chalkboard for me.
Yeah, I know. And listen, I'll never apologize for being a Mitch Marner fan. I got to coach this kid who was smaller than everyone else in a prospects game when he was like 15 years old. And I saw the heart of a lion out there. There's no question that he's had a tremendous career, also regarded one of the best Leafs in history with the numbers that he's put up. But in saying that, I didn't like what he said the other night too, and I'd be the first one to tell him or anyone else that. But it comes from a level of frustration, and you know, he can't bring that much emotion to a microphone after a game. And you know, he's been through a lot. There's no question he's been through a lot through the media, and you know, a lot of things have happened, including, as we know, being held at gunpoint. I mean, it as much as the money's great for him, it hasn't been great sometimes outside of the rink. So I get sometimes the frustration, but he's got to take a deep breath, and he's got to choose his words wisely.
So my question is, do you think, because these guys all get training, they get it from the league, they get it from the team, they get it from the agent. Do you think he just doesn't listen?
I'm not so sure about the training, to be honest with you.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He doesn't strike me as an uncoachable kid. When you're coachable everywhere. And I'm not sure what they're doing to him. And, you know, I mean, I know they got a PR department there, but I personally think that they can do a heck of a better job.
Well, that's shocking and disappointing. I would think that those guys, especially two of them, all of them, would be getting, both from the league, the union, their agents, access to somebody that could help them prevent situations like that.
I would think so too, but I don't get that impression. And maybe I'm wrong, but I do not get that impression.
Well, it's been a hell of a ride so far. We're only sitting here on January 20th, and what, we got a month and change till the death. Like, it was funny. The Leafs are here Sunday. When the Leafs came last time, I was at the Springsteen concert the night before, and the Euros were literally five rows in front of me having a great time. Until the next morning, I think three of them got traded, and it was quite the scene just before the deadline. We're not at the deadline yet, but here we sit. Be an interesting game tonight, interesting game tomorrow. Not many games left before the deadline. I'm one of the few who's taken a lot of interest in the fact that the talking heads seem to be suggesting that Brad has put the brakes on putting all of his chips in. It's good to see you. It's awesome to have you. Hope we can do it again.
It'll be an interesting finish here. Like I said, a bit of a fork in the road right now for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Can they string a few games together here and get themselves back on track? Or are we having a different conversation again in a week or two in terms of being a salesman at the trade deadline? Fun times either way, though, right?
You can hear Nick on your radio dial, on your podcast dial, on your streaming dial, and on your TV. Are you still selling the booze? I see the booze over your shoulder.
Oh yeah, Little Buddha's still there.
Where can people find it?
Right now, we're in a bit of a transition period with Little Buddha, but we're hoping to get going again in the fall. But it's in the U.S., it's in the Bahamas. We got a little bit of Little Buddha out west in Calgary. So, it's been a wonderful ride, a wonderful learning experience in the beverage industry.
Well, it's, as I said, it's your show's fantastic. It's a lot of fun to listen to. It's a great, we have a yin and a yang, if you will. We have two really good programs. And I will say this, it's awesome that you guys hold everybody accountable. And that is unique sometimes in the marketplace. There's a lot of people that like to sing praise all the time. And life isn't always, what do they say, gumdrops and lollipops. And that is a breath of fresh air. So to you and your team, thank you. And thank you for doing this. Okay. And I hope we can have you again in the press row.
Enjoyed it. Thank you.